This weekend starts right after this.
When shopping for car insurance, consider this. GEICO has been saving people money on car insurance for over 75 years. So if you're serious about savings, it's simple. Go to geico.com. After 75 years, they know how to save you money.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News. This weekend, with your host, Gordon Deal.
Working the election into classroom lessons. I'm Gordon Deal, along with Jennifer Koschenka. Here's what's coming up during this program.
One San Francisco teacher tells her high school students that President-elect Trump is racist and sexist and urges students to fight oppression. Hear how the election is being taught.
Sometimes a bad job interview is from something that's not easily defined, and that's chemistry in the opening few minutes. Tips on how to build a rapport.
Alabama football is great again. The Cleveland Browns are terrible again. We'll revisit the debate about what would happen if they played each other.
And the holy grail of food delivery, the perfect burger.
I talked to a 30-year-old consumer who loves burgers. He also loves these delivery apps. And he said that he actually had a really bad experience recently where he ordered something, and when it arrived at his house, it was disgusting. It was in this sort of pool of congealing fat or grease.
Wall Street Journal reporter Charlie Wells on delivery companies trying to bring you the perfect burger. His story is later in the hour. New presidents often face an uneasy limbo between the election and the first day of their presidency. Picking a cabinet can cause friction within the president's team and party. Campaign pledges can slip to the margins. The post-election honeymoon can look really short. And as Wall Street Journal editor Neil King says, Donald Trump's transition is showing strain on all those fronts. Neil, explain.
You know, transition is always a weird time. It's a weird feature of our electoral landscape that a president's elected and then has to wait around for 3 months almost to become president. And those transition periods are, you know, marked by a lot of different types of tension or upheaval. I'd have to say this one at the moment is unusual in a variety of ways for the sorts of tensions that it's shown. On the one hand, you know, Trump is moving ahead pretty briskly on picking cabinet secretaries, more so than has been the norm. A lot of times you go back to 2008, Barack Obama didn't really roll out his cabinet until the first and second week of December. You know, we already have a number of prominent picks that have come out on the Trump side. On the other hand, you know, we're seeing these very public displays of tension and unrest within his team over certain picks, most notably when it comes to the Secretary of State pick, which is one of the most important, and this kind of weird public pillaring of Mitt Romney that's been going on over the last 2 days. So there's been that. There's also just been this really unusual, I think maybe the single most unusual thing about this interregnum so far has been the degree to which Trump has already moved backwards on so many of his big campaign pledges. I mean, you know, normally people keep an eye on a president once they come into office as to how they begin to adjust to the pressures of Congress or the pressures of popular opinion. In this case, you know, we had him a couple of days after the fact, when he gave an interview to the Wall Street Journal, already moving back off his pledge to repeal Obamacare, that no, he's not going to deport all the illegal immigrants. He's going to deport maybe a couple million of them, not 11 million of them. You know, he's backed off the idea that waterboarding or various forms of torture are necessarily a good thing to do with terrorism suspects. So that part has just been really unusual to watch. And, you know, to say nothing of the various tweets that he seems to wake up and feel compelled to do basically daily, kind of opening up whole new areas of debate and discussion and outrage in some quarters, like the one he did this morning about, you know, flag burning should maybe result in somebody losing their citizenship or spending a year in jail, when the Supreme Court has ruled on multiple occasions that it is a form of protected speech.
How about, too, you point out this Quinnipiac poll found that a number of Mr. Trump's priorities are not very popular. Explain that.
Well, that's the other thing that I was noting here is that, so there's been this kind of backing off various things in a way, because I think the president-elect himself knows that some of these steps are not likely to be hugely popular. And that's going to be one of the interesting things about watching him as president, is to what extent he takes guidance from popular opinion in doing the sort of things that he'll do. I mean, a populist, in part, plays to the sentiments of the people. And, you know, if you look at the things that he has continued to stand by, for instance, he talked in the 60 Minutes interview about wanting to be, you know, appoint judges, Supreme Court judges that had very strong views against abortion and possibly pushing for an overturn of Roe versus Wade. And, you know, there's a lot of polling that has looked at this question, but there's a Quinnipiac poll that came out just the other day that showed that on that point, for instance, there was a large majority that was not in support of, you know, that kind of making illegal the obtaining of an abortion, and similar sort of things on, you know, one of the things that he's also strongly inclined to do, and I think will probably be one of the things that happens right off the bat, though it will take a few months, is some big reorganizing of the U.S. tax code. He wants there to be really strong tax cuts that would certainly assist the wealthiest Americans, and this same poll found that 67% of people oppose lowering taxes on the wealthy. So it's just going to be interesting, clearly, to see how some of the things that he is standing by will be received if he, in the end, does indeed push forward on those things.
We're speaking with the Wall Street Journal's Neil King. His piece is called The Uneasy Interregnum of Donald Trump. That word interregnum, by the way, I believe I was diagnosed with that after eating some bad fish at one time. How do you drag that word out?
Well, I mean, it's just the period in between kings, you know, inter and regnum being the Latin word for king. So it's the period that takes place when one king dies or goes by the wayside before the next one takes his or her place. So that's, I guess, the equivalent of the moment we're in now.
Does that come up in a lot of, like, your social circles? Because that's not one, like, I've heard on the, you know, sidelines of a soccer game or a dance competition, something like that. I was wondering, like, what circles that word comes out in.
You know, these Beltway people down in Washington, they use a lot of highfalutin words around the soccer pitches. So, you know, that must be one of them. We just talk about interregnums all the time.
Thanks, Neil. Wall Street Journal editor Neil King. 13 minutes now after the hour on This Weekend. If you're looking to grow or relocate your business, there are three numbers you should know. 10, 2000, and 6. 10 stands for Michigan being one of America's top 10 states for business. 2000 is the number of burdensome regulations Michigan has eliminated in the last 5 years. And 6 stands for Michigan's rank for best entrepreneurial climates. All those numbers add up to the one state that has all that and more. Michigan. Go to MichiganBusiness.org to learn more. That's MichiganBusiness.org to learn more. Thanks for being with us on this first weekend of December. The holiday travel season is upon us, and with millions taking to the skies, a lot of people are asking, how do you fix what's wrong about travel? Travel expert and author Christopher Elliott says, make no mistake, the industry is broken, and badly. He explores how it can be fixed. Chris, start with the gazillion fees that we get hit with.
The fees are really a great example of that, where all the things that used to be included in the price of your ticket, the ability, for example, to make a change to a ticket, the ability to make a seat reservation even, to get a meal, all those things used to be included, to check a bag, they were all included in the price of your ticket. Now they've all been what's called unbundled. So what you're getting is just a seat, and very often it's nothing else, not even the ability to carry a bag on some of the ultra-discount carriers. So one of the things you can do, that airlines can do, is to just maybe bring a little common sense to those fees, include some of those things maybe in the price of the ticket.
Even if you're going to boost the price a little bit?
Yeah, and that's the thing, is when they unbundled the tickets, they didn't lower fares at the same time. They just took that out and then started charging extra for it. So it was more revenue to the airline. And I think that was pretty unfair.
Mm. All right, you say, too, end the status games, meaning what?
Yeah, they've gotten out of control, where we're separated between, you know, on a plane especially, it's the class system, or I like to call it the caste system, mid-air caste system is alive and well, where you have people in the front who are just getting everything, the lie-flat, seats, the fawning service by the flight attendants, the five-course meals. In some cases, you have in-air suites, you know, on the long-haul flights, where you have an actual bed that you sleep in. And then it gets segmented between the people who have all of this. They have elite status, they have all the cards and the points, and then you have people in the back who just want to get from point A to point B, and they're being wedged into the back of the plane. Mm-hmm. And the other day, someone called me a socialist for suggesting it, and if that's what a socialist is, then fine by me. But I think that there should be just a basic level of dignity to the airline experience. You shouldn't be able to cram someone in the back of the plane. I don't mind people in the front having something, but give people in the back at least a little bit of human dignity, too. Mm-hmm. And that's what these point systems do, is they separate the haves from the have-nots, and they're also very addictive. They're bad on balance. They're bad for air travelers. They're good for airlines. I say let's get rid of them.
We're speaking with travel expert Chris Elliott. He's got a book, too. It's called How to Be the World's Smartest Traveler. And we're talking about his piece entitled Five Things That Need to Be Fixed in Travel Now. What about the lies, point number three?
Unfortunately, travel companies, hotels, airlines lie about a lot of things. They lie about their amenities, but mostly they lie about their prices. For example, you can go online right now and look up a hotel in Las Vegas, get a really cheap rate. But as you go through the booking process, they're going to start adding taxes and other mandatory fees. The worst fee, of course, is the mandatory hotel resort fee that includes a lot of things that maybe you want, maybe you don't want, like Wi-Fi, access to your hotel gym. And those are added whether you use them or not. And that's very unfair and deceptive. Unfortunately, the Federal Trade Commission, which has jurisdiction over this, has not acted. What they need to do is say, you can't do this. You have to quote the full price of your hotel rate right up front. You can't wait until the very end to tell them how much it is.
You get the sense, Chris, that any of this stuff will change? Because at least as flyers, I feel sometimes we're between a rock and a hard place. We can say, you know what? Forget it. We're not flying anymore. But, you know, business dictates it sometimes, a lot of times.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I should say that airlines have their own version of deceptive pricing where they quote a fare that doesn't include a lot of the things that you would need, like the ability to carry a bag on a plane or the ability to check a bag. And air travelers tell me that they're tired of it. They don't want to play that game anymore. But they have to fly. Some of them have to fly on business. Or if you're flying overseas, it's really the only practical way of flying to a place like Europe. You can't take a cruise, really. I think that the airlines have us over a barrel, and they know it, and they're taking advantage of the fact that there's almost no competition in the airline industry now. I mean, you're talking about three, maybe four major airlines. On some routes, there is no competition, effectively. It's all controlled by one or maybe two airlines, and so you can't go and play one competitor off the other or say, I'm going to take my business elsewhere. There's nowhere else to take the business to.
Are you confident or optimistic at all that there could be changes made that benefit the customer, the flyer, the traveler?
Well, there's only two ways this can go. First of all, there could be more competition, and the only way to create that is to lower the barriers to entry. It's very hard to start an airline. With hotels, it's a little bit easier. Or the government could come in and regulate. Now, it's very unlikely that in the next 4 years there's going to be any significant amount of regulation. But I do think that with the pro-competition voices that have now come to power in Washington, that there might be an ability to, I don't know, come out and start a new airline, for example. That would be great, I think.
Thanks, Chris. Chris Elliott, travel expert and author. It's 22 minutes now after the hour on This Weekend. Glad you're with us. So like the first few minutes of a sports competition, those early moments are often critical in a job interview, too. Job seekers who don't get a call back after an interview often wonder where they went wrong. New research finds that one thing that has a bigger impact than you might expect is that interpersonal chemistry called rapport. Here's This Weekend's Jennifer Koschenka.
It's all about rapport. Landing your next job may depend upon how well you start off your interview. Here with the story is Sue Schellenbarger of the Wall Street Journal. Sue, why are the first few minutes of an interview so important?
Some new research from Georgia Tech found that even though, regardless of how you answer the questions, how good you look, and so on, your ability to create rapport or that sense of bonding, that kind of interpersonal chemistry in the first few minutes still has an effect independent of those other factors on how the hiring manager will score you at the end of the interview. It colors the way that person sees you throughout the encounter.
So what should you do to get off on the right foot?
It's interesting because there isn't a lot of research on how to learn to establish rapport. The researchers advised practicing. For example, as you go through your day, try striking up a casual conversation with strangers, retail clerks, baristas at Starbucks. Other research on professions where people really do need to build rapport suggests that finding common ground, looking for signs of shared interest around the office, sports teams, or, you know, other things you share, being really friendly and upbeat about common topics, even such as the commute or your weather. Watching nonverbal cues, is that person open to conversation, being sensitive to eye contact and how friendly that person looks. Even the skills that are employed by improvisational comedians can have a humanizing effect, and this includes taking the yes and approach, being ready with a quick positive comeback, being empathetic, and being really interested in the other person can all help to strike rapport.
So how can you do this without sounding insincere?
That's the trick. You really can't be insincere because this kind of thing is very transparent. If you're insincere, it will show right away and work against you. The researchers suggested that you really need to learn to play a role in one sense. That is, if you're too nervous to really be empathetic, practice with strangers, just trying to not think about yourself, but focus on something about that person's day. If you're in Starbucks, ask, boy, it must be hard to deal with a line this long. Just practice showing empathy for others and focusing on their concerns rather than your own. In a way, it's role-playing, but the more you do it, the more natural it will come.
You mentioned finding common ground with an interviewer. How can you find research, or how can you research him or her to find out what they like?
One interesting example I had in the story was of a job applicant who actually took an app called Crystal Nose and analyzed the LinkedIn profile of the hiring manager and discovered that he was really business-oriented and liked to cut straight to the chase. He figured this guy wouldn't like small talk, so he went in armed with a list of things he would do for the company if he were hired, and he got the job. The hiring manager was hugely impressed that he went to the trouble to do all that homework. So I think, as always, do your homework ahead will empower you to, you know, be empathic and respond in ways that are appropriate. You know, you don't want to go in and make a joke that's, you know, not funny inside that company, such as, you know, joking about phones exploding at Samsung. So, you know, you really have to be careful and do your homework in advance.
This weekend's Jennifer Koschenka with The Wall Street Journal's Sue Schellenbarger. 30 minutes after the hour on This Weekend. With the holidays almost here, you don't have time to go to the post office. It'll be packed with everyone mailing holiday gifts and packages. So you should use Stamps.com instead. With Stamps.com, you can avoid all the hassle of going to the post office during the busy holiday season. Everything you would do at the post office, you can do right from your desk. Buy and print official U.S. postage using your own computer and printer. You can print postage for any letter or package. The instant you need it, then the mailman picks it up. It's so easy and convenient. Right now, sign up for Stamps.com and use my last name, Deal, for this special offer. A 4-week trial plus a $110 bonus offer that includes postage plus a digital scale. Don't wait. Go to Stamps.com. And before you do anything else, click on the microphone at the top of the homepage and type in the word Deal. That's Stamps.com. Then enter the code Deal. Glad you could be with us on this first full weekend in December. Gordon Deal with Jennifer Koschenka. Coming up this half hour, what educators are teaching about the election to their students. Should you be able to shop online from your work computer? You know, if you're giving the company so much of your time. Restaurants and apps try to perfect burger delivery. And what if Alabama played the Cleveland Browns? That story in about 20 minutes. Well, as some students protest the election of Donald Trump and others rejoice, teachers are wrestling with how best to educate them on a significant event that has split the country. Here's Wall Street Journal reporter Tonell Hobbs, who covers education issues. Tonell, what have you found out?
I've found out that the teachers, because obviously the textbooks have not caught up yet to this current election cycle. So teachers are kind of going, you know, on the fly. They're basically incorporating the current events into their lessons, and obviously that can be pretty tricky because you don't want to upset some students. I mean, it was a very, you know, contentious election. So teachers are having to be really careful about how they're, you know, bringing the lessons into the classroom. So, you know, for some teachers it was challenging. For some teachers, they found it, they actually really liked that they could teach off of current events. Yeah. I mean, you know, the timing for them is just, wow, these are teachable moments. And they find that the students are really more interested in this election probably than in past election cycles.
Yeah, it was unavoidable, that's for sure.
Right.
So the teachers designing lessons, lesson plans, do they have to go off some sort of formatic or curriculum that's been set by the school district itself, or are they free to do as they choose?
The teachers that I talked to, their school districts had not yet implemented or came up with official, you know, lesson plans. And some of that, too, is for some of these school districts, when a lesson plan is created, it has to go through certain levels of approval. You might even have to have the school board get involved. But so these teachers were just kind of taking it upon themselves to go ahead and, you know, teach the kids about this, because a lot of the students did have questions. They want to know, what does this mean? And some students were unhappy, some were happy. So the teachers really were there to, you know, help them through it.
All right. So you found some highly contentious stuff at Mission High School in San Francisco. Explain what happened there.
One of the teachers created her own lesson plan. And in that lesson plan, it had Mr. Trump had referred to him as a racist and sexist.
Wow.
And I was like, wow. So what I end up doing, I called the, because I've found the curriculum. It was on the union's website there in San Francisco. So I called them, and they told me that a lot of their teachers, you know, thought, you know, were supportive of it. And they told me they had heard from some parents, too, and those parents liked it. So I called the school system there in San Francisco Unified School District, and they were pretty much neutral about it. They, you know, they said, you know, it's not mandatory. We leave it up to our teachers. It's just an option. So that's where they are there on that.
Was there any pushback on that at all?
There was. I mean, there was, they have a Republican Party there, and I talked to Howard Epstein. He's the vice chair of communications for the San Francisco Republican Party, and he just called the lesson plan ridiculous. And, you know, he said even for a liberal city like San Francisco, he thought it was ridiculous. And he just felt that teachers who do use it should be fired immediately.
We're speaking with Tonell Hobbs. She covers national education issues for The Wall Street Journal. Her piece is called Teachers Rework Lesson Plans After Donald Trump's Election. What were some of the other things that you heard?
Well, you know, I thought it was interesting how teachers were implementing, you know, the election, and even after the election, you know, the news into their lesson plans. You know, like one teacher in West Virginia, he's in a West Virginia town called Beckley. It's very conservative. So, but he, what the track he took, you know, he would say, like, you know, he'd focus on President Andrew Jackson and his appeal to the common man, and how in some ways that relates to, you know, President-elect Donald Trump. So I did find that. So, but there were some teachers that really did have to deal with certain issues, like in Little Rock. I talked to a teacher in his classes, you know, majority Hispanic, and a lot of his students are really concerned about immigration issues. So, you know, he had to take that track where he had to explain the process as far as deportation and things like that. It just appears to me that depending on where you are in the country,
yeah,
those are the issues you're dealing with, you know, more so in the classroom. And so that, I thought that was really interesting.
Thanks, Tonell. Wall Street Journal reporter Tonell Hobbs, who covers education issues. It's 20 minutes now in front of the hour on This Weekend. Thanks for being with us. Even after Cyber Monday, some retailers have turned the following days into Cyber Week. This brings up a dilemma, though, for bosses. Should they let their workers do their shopping on company time? Is any loss in productivity, for example, worth it if, say, it builds up morale? What does your company say about it? Analysis from Michael Ray Newman, CEO and head of training for Ziegler International. Michael Ray, how do you see it?
Well, it just depends. Do you want to get on, or do you want to be part of the crew? Do you want them to do it behind your back as a CEO or as a manager, or do you want to embrace it and kind of have the opportunity to control it? It's the choice of the management staff, really.
Right, because it's going to happen.
Yeah, it's going to happen. Just like video now, they say on Facebook video, they recommend that you put the caption, because more videos are watched from 1 and 4 in the afternoon Central Time than any other time of the day, because people are in their cubicles scrolling through their Facebook after lunch.
If you're the manager then of your crew, and you'd like to address it, understanding that it's going to happen, what can you do? Can you put certain restrictions on it, or say, hey, listen, how about a half hour? I know you're going to do it. What's the approach?
Well, there's a couple of different ways, and that we have this same conversation every year when March Madness comes around of what they're going to look their brackets. They're going to be watching the game, so you can either get on board with it, and there's some companies that will even set time frames, like you said, is a really good idea. Okay, and then they say bring it, and they have a board. They say the best deal of the day. They share places where they're getting deals. So they're actually taking time out that day. They're setting two benchmarks. They set benchmarks of let's talk, make it fun, and let's talk about what we can do, who has the best deals, share ideas. But then they also set benchmarks on productivity for that day. So it's like in sales training. A lot of times we teach sales at Ziggler. We do a lot of training and speaking. It's a $70 billion industry, and we're teaching leadership and generational communication. This really falls under that. But in our sales training, a lot of times when you go into a customer, you're not trying to, let's don't go for a sale. The goal is to maybe get a prospect to get some referrals, or maybe to do a discovery call and to walk out of their understanding. So a lot of companies are coming in, and they're making it fun. They say, let's share some ideas. Let's go ahead and go do some Black Friday shopping. And then on the other hand, though, let's set some benchmarks for the day, what we have to get done. And you'll be surprised, the productivity goes up.
We're speaking with Michael Ray Newman, CEO and head of training at Ziggler International. And we're talking about whether or not employers should let their workers shop on, say, Cyber Monday. Do you find that there's a generational gap when you have to discuss this, say, with millennials versus baby boomers?
What we've found, though, when they do talk about this, and if we were to embrace it as a manager, as a leader of a company, the millennials actually get excited because they are contributing and they're teaching people how to look for some of these things, using some of the apps, using some of the codes. And the boomers feel like they're being taught something by the millennials, and it really turns into a positive situation, and it turns into a team-building exercise if you use it the right way.
So we're kind of in this phase where many of us work beyond the 9-to-5 because we have our phones, so we're checking work-related emails. Some might argue we should be entitled to do a little Cyber Monday shopping on the company clock since we're probably not getting paid beyond the 5 o'clock punch-out time.
Man, I think that you nailed it, because work is not necessarily somewhere we go anymore. It's what we do, and we're always connected, and that's a negative and a positive thing, because we let it bleed over into our personal life and our family life, and sometimes it gets us out of balance. We teach a lot of that too, on how to keep yourself in check with that. But you're right, man. I think that we are entitled to a little bit of that, and that's why I think that when managers get involved and lay out a plan and really take ideas and put it into play, and they wind up having more productivity that day, because people are making sure they get their benchmarks done. And it's like your day before vacation. You always have a list, right? And you get more done the day before vacation than you do any other time.
That's true.
So when you have that benchmark and you have those things, you still can do both.
Michael Ray Newman, CEO and head of training for Ziggler International. 13 minutes now in front of the hour on This Weekend.
Say goodbye to thieves. Say hello to CUDA-CAM by Barracuda Networks, the leader in cloud security and storage solutions. CUDA-CAM is a complete cloud-hosted video surveillance solution that captures high-quality footage when motion is detected. Just plug in one or more CUDA-CAM cameras with no network or camera configuration. Video evidence is automatically encrypted and stored in the Barracuda Cloud for secure access from any web browser or mobile device. Visit CUDA-CAM.com to learn why CUDA-CAM is so easy on your wallet, yet so hard to avoid.
Thanks for being with us. With enhancements like truffle butter, veal jus, slabs of bacon, and soft pretzel buns, fast casual and higher-end restaurants have elevated the once-humble burger to cult status. But fancier ingredients also up the risks of a burger gone wrong, especially when it comes to burger delivery services. It's a story from Wall Street Journal reporter Charlie Wells, who says the perfect burger is the holy grail of food delivery. Charlie, explain what you looked at.
Well, this is
is really interesting, and it's sort of an outgrowth of the gourmet burger trend. So anyone who's been to maybe a fast casual restaurant or, say, even a higher-end restaurant over the past couple of years has probably seen some really fancy burgers on the menu. They are, you know, more expensive, say, above the $10 mark, and they are more complicated than ever.
So what are some of the challenges popping up with burger delivery?
So one of the problems is that as they're being delivered, and here in London, often they're delivered on bike, they can be delivered on scooter. One of these companies, Deliveroo, even uses runners in Hong Kong where it operates. And the burgers can literally topple over. One of the executives at a delivery startup I was talking to compared some of these burgers to skyscrapers. And so one of the things that you can do to keep that skyscraper up tall is to put a skewer in it, one of these bamboo skewers. Another problem that a lot of these burgers have is that they can get soggy. They can sort of, you know, keep cooking themselves in the containers that restaurants put them in. So actually, one of these executives recommended corrugated cardboard delivery boxes. Those help keep the products warm, but also having little air vents in those boxes, and those prevent that sort of sauna effect that makes the burger soggy.
We're speaking with Wall Street Journal reporter Charlie Wells. And with these gourmet burgers, customers are going to expect even more.
That's right. I talked to a 30-year-old consumer who loves burgers. He also loves these delivery apps. And he said that he actually had a really bad experience recently where he ordered something. He's British, and so he told me that he ordered something that was similar to a, quote, posh Big Mac. And when it arrived at his house, it was disgusting. It was in this sort of pool of congealing fat or grease. He wasn't exactly sure what it was, but he thought that may have come from the veal jus, and it was in a really ugly box. And so what a lot of these delivery companies are trying to do is to work with the restaurants that they deliver and try to get them to use higher-end packaging and more effective packaging that will get these burgers to customers in good shape.
I've gone the pizza route, but I've not gone the burger delivery route just yet. Wall Street Journal reporter Charlie Wells, who's based out of the London Bureau. It's 6 minutes now in front of the hour on This Weekend. Glad you're with us. So an old debate is back, right, with Alabama football flexing its undefeated muscle again and the NFL's Cleveland Browns sporting an 0-for season record. Could Alabama beat the Browns if they were to play? The consensus is a unanimous no. Quarterback Joe Namath, the Alabama and New York Jets legend, was on the field for last week's Iron Bowl between Alabama and Auburn. He told the Wall Street Journal there are profound differences between pro and college, like size, speed, athleticism, and the mentality. Fox Sports college football analyst Joel Klatt reiterated the size of the players and the speed is too much. He says big speed is the biggest differentiator from college to pro. Wall Street Journal sports writer Jason Gay says, look, we all know this is a pretty dopey debate, but this always happens when there's a college sports juggernaut and a flailing professional club. He says it was a thing a few years back when Kentucky had an NCAA basketball powerhouse and the Philadelphia 76ers were starting what he called four lawn chairs and a tabby cat. That'll do it for this hour. For Jennifer Koshenka, I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to This Weekend.
When your medical practice is growing fast and you have more patients than you have room for, you need to start, well, making some room, which means all of a sudden you're looking to buy new exam tables and stools, x-ray machines, and microscopes quickly. Business cards from American Express Open can give you buying power to help cover the big purchases you need to make when you need to make them. Find out how American Express cards and services can help prepare you for growth at open.com.